everyone. You're listening to the World Teacher Program for Share International New Zealand on Planet FM 104.6. Each Friday morning, we bring you information from the teachers of the Ageless Wisdom. The purpose of our program is to introduce Maitreya, the world teacher for the Age of Aquarius. Maitreya does not come alone. He brings with him the Masters of Wisdom, a group of highly evolved teachers. They work in many fields and can teach us the art of living, how to live in right relationship with each other. With their inspiration, we can transform our civilization, creating justice and peace for us all.
Good morning and welcome to the program. I'd like to start with a piece from the September issue of Share International magazine titled Rats Detecting Landmines and Tuberculosis. I won't have time to read the whole article. It's about 3 pages long, but I'll see if I can pick out the most interesting bits. It's an interview with Christoph Cox by a group member over in the US called Jason Francis. APOPO, a registered NGO in Belgium and non-profit group in the US, trains African giant pouch rats, named for their large cheek pouches, to detect landmines and tuberculosis, also known as TB. Based in Tanzania, APOPO conducts its training in the city of Morogoro in Tanzania. Over 60 countries are plagued with landmines from past conflicts. TB infects 10 million people and kills between 1 and 2 million each year. Since the group's founding in 1997, the rats, nicknamed Hero Rats, have detected over 140,000 landmines. In addition, they have identified over 22,000 cases of active TB infection that clinics missed, as well as preventing over 170,000 potential infections. Christoph Cox is the CEO and co-founder of APOPO. He was interviewed for Share International by Jason Francis. The first question that Jason asked is, the co-founder of APOPO, Bart Vijens, owned rats as a youngster and trained them to detect treats he would hide. How did that grow into an idea to train rats, particularly African giant pouched rats, to detect landmines and TB? And Christoph Cox's response, we were both enrolled in industrial design school in the University of Antwerp. It was always part of my education to come up with creative ideas. And Bart was very interested in the landmine problem. So he analysed the problem and we found that detection was one of the real bottlenecks because it is slow, expensive and dangerous. He took a look at all kinds of detection possibilities. We know that rats have a very strong sense of smell and are trainable, but consulted a professor, Ron Verhagen, who specialised in rodent ecology at the University of Antwerp and who advised him to use the African giant pouched rat. The African giant pouched rat was chosen for this job for several reasons. They store things underground and often look for their food underground. They live up to 8 years, whereas smaller rats live only 2 or 3 years. They are also a calm animal, so you can pet them. Other rats are sometimes nervous creatures. And it had already been proven that you can raise and keep them in captivity. Because of their size, they are sometimes used for food and bred in captivity. Next question. About how many have been raised in captivity and trained to detect either landmines or TB? We have at least 300 rats at the moment. We have trained and put into a program 78 rats in the last 5 years, 26 for TB and 52 for mine detection. Could you describe the training a rat undergoes, and how does training differ from detecting landmines versus TB? After the rats are born, we leave them with their mother for about 10 weeks. We used to take them a bit earlier, but we give them more time now, so they are much stronger. Then we start with socialisation training. We do all kinds of things, take them on the motorbike and put them in the lorry. We play the radio and put them on top of it. They have to get used to being around people and sounds and environmental stimulation. After about 3 weeks, we start with click training. We click with a small handheld gadget and give a food reward. We repeat this process. This is the same for rats trained in both landmine and TB detection. Then we start discriminating. The rat has to do something to get that click. For mine detection, we use tea eggs, which are small metal egg-shaped containers that you put tea into and dunk in a cup. The rat only gets this clicking when they discover the egg, which has the smell of TNT, an explosive material that is relatively stable and easy to handle. Then they get food. After that, there will be several eggs, and only one has the smell of TNT and the other has another smell. They only get the click when they detect the egg that smells of TNT. They realise that with one particular smell, they get the click and a food reward. For tuberculosis, the rat will be in a case that has neutral and positive sputum, and the positive is coughed up saliva and mucus samples. Then it gets more difficult for the mine detection rats. We take them to a training minefield where the area is small and the targets are on the surface. Gradually, we will take them to a training area that is bigger and where the targets are deeper under the soil. After 9 months to a year, they have to search a much larger area and detect many landmines, 5, 7, or 10, and they are not allowed to miss any of them. Then they will be exported to countries and trained with local types of landmines that may be different to the ones we use in our minefield. After a few weeks, they will be supervised by the local authority responsible for demining. After they pass, which mostly all of them do, they qualify as mine detectors. And in which countries are the rats working to detect landmines? Currently, we are working in Angola, Zimbabwe, Mozambique, Cambodia, South Sudan, and we have just started in Turkey. Could you talk about how they work in conjunction with more conventional methods when detecting landmines? They always work in conjunction with conventional methods. When they indicate the presence of a landmine, the trainer will put down a mark. Then a person brings a metal detector to find and confirm the exact location. They will then excavate the mine. They start probing with something that looks like a screwdriver to loosen the soil and remove the mine. The mine will be taken away and exploded. What is the benefit of having a rat help with landmine detection as opposed to just using metal detectors? A rat can investigate an area the size of a tennis court in 40 minutes that could take up to 4 days manually. It depends on the location because there are often thousands and thousands of pieces of metal in a minefield from previous explosions. And each time the metal detector beeps, the operator has to follow a procedure. They have to take their brush and small shovel to uncover the metal, pick up the pieces, put them in a box, go back to the metal detector and check again. And then if the signal is gone, they can move on. Sometimes the false indications with a metal detector are more than 1,000%. A rat is trained only to sniff out the explosive material and not the metal content. How does a rat let their handler know they have detected a landmine? It will scratch slightly over the mine and it will stand still for about 3 seconds and let the handler know it has made a detection. Why is it important to use rats to help detect TB as opposed to medical testing alone? Currently, there are 10 million TB cases per year. In sub-Saharan Africa, only about 50% of those cases are diagnosed. So many people have TB without knowing it. That is often because of the lack of diagnostic capacity. In addition, the existing technology is microscopy, which hasn't changed much since 1882. Microscopy detects between 20 to 60% of the cases. With people who are HIV positive, the detection rate is around 25%. In such cases, when a person goes to the hospital, they have 3 chances out of 4 of being told they are negative when they are actually positive. The rats have such a speed for detection. As an example, we work in 55 hospitals. In the city of Dar es Salaam in Tanzania, our testing facility collects all sputum samples. The rats examine a lot of negative samples where patients were told to go home, and we find they are positive. We increase the detection rate by about 40%. For every 100 samples, the hospitals get 10 to 15 positive. And out of those, 85 to 90 negatives, we identify another 5 or 6 positives missed by the hospitals. The important thing is that we help stop transmission because every patient can infect another 10 or 15 people a year. That finishes the excerpts from that article. For more information, you could check out their website, which is apopo.org, apopo.org. Now for another article. This is again from the September issue. It's a report by Pauline Welch in the UK, and the title is A Prey M, Not So Much a Food Bank, More a Lifeboat. St. Barthélemy, a deeply impoverished and neglected neighbourhood in Marseille, France, has become a model for community-led solutions to the effects of chronic deprivation and marginalisation. The local McDonald's fast food restaurant, the second biggest employer, sacked all 77 employees, closed the business, and moved to sell the site in 2018, after the government withdrew its subsidies. This despite the fact that so many people in the area had come to depend on it for employment and somewhere to eat out. The building stayed empty until the first COVID lockdown. In March 2020, the squatters moved in. They were volunteers who were set on transforming the building into a food bank against McDonald's wishes in order to help those in the area who were going hungry, many of whom were jobless, immigrants, refugees or homeless. They changed the sign to Le Prey M, which in English means the after M. One of the principal organisers, Fatih Boarua, who himself grew up in the most neglected area of Marseille and had spent much of his life doing community work, said of the effects of COVID, "When the first lockdown struck, people were more worried about dying of starvation than of COVID around here. Everything was closed down, even charities and social help. People were left to fend for themselves, with or without papers or its official documents. They had nothing." Another volunteer, or Rada, reported the same story, emphasising their isolation from the better-resourced southern parts of Marseille. And she said, "Here, people weren't scared to die of COVID. They were scared to die of hunger. A lot of us, including me, lost our jobs, and this neighbourhood is barely connected to the city centre. There's only one bus line that goes through the whole northern side. Meanwhile, the southern side has metro lines, tramway lines, bus lines, and even shuffle boats, or ferries. The community pulled together. Farmers brought fruit and vegetables rather than see them go to waste. Shops offered food. Firemen and local groups took food out to those in need. And local people donated funds. In the first 5 weeks after opening, 100,000 people were given food parcels. Soon, 47 local associations were working in partnership with the original staff, identifying those in need. Queues for food were hours long. Ex-managing director of the restaurant, Kamal Gumari, other employees, artists and activists, began to raise funds to buy or lease the building. By June 2021, there were 50,000 donors giving £25 each. All who donate to the fund own a share in Le Pas de Pepe, the people's share, a not-for-profit company where no one is the owner. Buarua explained, "What we want to do is to create a fast social food centre here, a restaurant where you are handed your menu and the prices are determined from what you earn. So if you are a sans-papier, which means an undocumented migrant, then you can come and eat twice a week for free. Those on minimum wage only pay £3 per person, and so on. A restaurant menu on a sliding scale. We will re-employ 37 employees, and the others will be made up of 40 volunteers, offering half a day per month of their time to keep the whole thing going. It is a model to not only help the poorest to survive, but to fight back against the victimhood caused by capitalism. Aspirations for social use go even further and are supported by the local mayor, who has stuck to his word and ensured that the site has been taken out of McDonald's hands under a compulsory purchase order, making it possible for the project to continue and develop. Seen as almost mythical for his many years of fighting McDonald's for workers' rights and for hiring young people to get them off the street, Kamal Gumari sees the initiative as a group effort and an opportunity for him to pay the community back. But he also hopes the project will inspire the whole of Marseille. He says, "We want the north-south divide gone. Everyone is sick of it. Around here, there are a lot of hard luck kids who aren't given a chance. I know because I used to be one. The thing that saved me was this McDonald's. They hired me when I was 16. They gave me an opportunity. And now we hope to give one to every kid who needs it." "This isn't just a food bank," says one of the beneficiaries. "This is more like a lifeboat." And that was sourced from the websites vice.com, gald-dem.com, and from en.aspresm.com. Hope you enjoyed those two articles, and I apologise for my mispronunciation of some of the French terms in that article. Thank you very much for listening. If you'd like further information, we recommend checking out the website share-international.org, which contains excerpts from many of the articles that we read out on this program from the various issues. Admittedly, though, the website is currently under development, so you won't find these excerpts for another few weeks until the new website is up and running. And just before we finish, wanted to remind you that we have regular meditations in Auckland and, of course, in many other places around New Zealand. The type of meditation we do is transmission. It's very simple and effective, and it's a way to help the world. There is no cost involved, and pretty much anyone is welcome to come along and try it out. So if you'd like information either about what we have talked about in the programs, or if you'd like to find out about this transmission meditation, email us at sharenz@yahoo.com. And also, if you would like, we can send you a copy of the magazine free of charge. So please do get in contact if you're interested. So thank you for listening and wishing you all a lovely week.